Stephen Esposito is the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Their website is yellowstonewm.com. Stephen joins us regularly. Let's talk a little bit about this run-up we've had. Stephen, what's your first observation about it all?
Well, hi, John. Well, it's obviously wonderful. We are all enjoying the run-up, a little bit of a pullback now, which I think is healthy. But yeah, there's a lot of positives in the market right now, showing that M&A will be coming. The risk of tax hikes or the tax cuts sunsetting and going back up are pretty much dissipated at this point, or disappeared.
Yeah.
So I think between the combination of the fears over tax hikes, the situation with mergers and acquisitions coming, the banks and financials are doing much better under more deregulation, what appears to be coming. All those factors combined are having a positive impact, but I think we come a little too far, too fast, and you're seeing a little bit of a healthy pullback.
Well, it really is remarkable. If someone wants to take some profits now, you could hardly blame them. I wonder which of these companies or sectors you think have the longest legs then, which are going to have the nicest run here?
Well, we've been on the financials, you know, since the financial crisis we had about 18 months ago. That's one of our single biggest positions, and we're just enjoying the ride right now. I haven't been adding to it, but I think those will continue to do well. A lot of the domestic auto companies are catching up because of the possibility of tariffs on foreign automakers. I'm not sure how much of that will actually come to fruition, but the psychological effect is having those stocks go up. And honestly, they're cheap. Their valuations are very low. But, you know, tech has been underperforming. I'm sure you've seen that. And a lot of that money's rotating into the rest of the market, I think. So I'm actually starting to see some bargains in the tech world. If they continue to fall as we get into the end of the year and you see some tax loss selling as well, those could be good areas to start accumulating again in the market and some of the tech sector.
I'm interested in what you said about domestic automakers, because you're suggesting the fundamentals support the valuations and even the buying opportunity. I wonder about the market in general, though, given the run-up we've had.
It's been a two-tiered or three-tiered market for years now. You've got everything, you know, was focused on a handful of tech names and some companies related to them, and the rest of the market just stayed behind. It was not a healthy market, we said, for a long time. Now you're seeing broadening out, which I think is very healthy. Seeing more money going to other sectors of the market and money coming out of some of these high-flying tech names. So I think that's good. I think it's good, and now the uncertainty of the election is over, investors can recalibrate as to what they think will do better going forward, what areas will do better and worse. And the consumer continues to be reasonably strong. So all these factors combined, I think, bode well for the market. Just don't chase things. Don't pay 100, 200 times earnings for things. I think that's a little silly.
Mm. You think that interest rates are going to buoy the smaller size companies out there too? Those that don't have the cash to expand might start borrowing again?
Well, I'd like to see them come back down. This rise in interest rates, recently, has, you know, got the market a little scared. I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing a pullback. But today they're down a little. I think rates could come down some more. I think they belong a little bit lower. The normalized yield curve is good. It's no longer inverted after 2 years, so that's a positive. But I think the jump in interest rates, it could be the fact that investors' confidence in the last week or two have come back, and that's why they're selling off bonds to go back into equities. That could be one of the reasons you're seeing a drop in the bond prices. That's plausible. But going forward, I still think equities with some dividends are good. I'm not a big fan of the bonds in terms of their yields. I don't think they're high enough except the short-term paper. But generally, I think it's a positive environment for the market, and we'll know more as we go into 2025.
Prices didn't go up too much in October, right?
Yeah, they're not bad, but you got to remember they're up 2 or 3% over a year ago, but overall in the last 4 years, prices are still 20 to 25% higher in general than they were 4 years ago. So when people go to the store and they see, yeah, they haven't gone up much more, but they're still substantially greater than they were a few years ago. It's amazing when you can go to a regular hamburger place and see what a cheeseburger cost, or what the average consumer is spending on basic necessities. It's something we've never seen before. So that's still going to weigh on the market and the consumer, unfortunately.
I wonder when we're going to shake that thing. I mean, interest rates are essentially where they are. Inflation is essentially where they want them to be. Inflation is where they want it to be. But we've got this lag still because, you know, that they don't subtract. It just adds
right on.
But I mean, I wonder at some point if maybe wages will catch up, or our mindset will just be reset so that we don't feel that inflation that we experienced a couple years ago so much.
No, it's still lingering. It's there. You go to the store, it's still there. It's not going anywhere. It's just not getting worse. I think that will start to come back to normal. I hope it'll normalize and come down. I'm not going to say deflation in the entire economy, but you could easily see some of the costs coming down, the cost of some of these products. You're seeing a lot of companies starting to lay off. More and more we're seeing announcements of that. So labor costs may go down, won't go up as high. But the consumer needs some relief in that area and just basic groceries. If that continues, that'll help the economy. And also if we can get rates down as well, the mortgage rates that could make things more affordable and more capital to go towards other necessities that people need. So we're in a weird place right now.
Stephen Esposito. Yes, go ahead, Stephen. Pardon me, finish that thought.
That's okay. We're in a weird place right now, and I think we just got to be patient and let the markets do what they have to do.
Yeah. Stephen is the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest, yellowstonewm.com. Nice to talk to you, Stephen. We'll do it again.
Thank you.
Bree Fowler joins us, senior writer at CNET and CNET.com. Hi, Bree. Welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you.
I am surprised. Is this the first time we've spoken since the election? How many people, have they left Twitter to go to Blue Sky, or are these just new users? But I heard it was a migration of something like a million people.
Yeah, Blue Sky has picked up about a million new users in the week since the election. You know, people are looking for an alternative to X, which has gotten, definitely it's not what it used to be.
Right. But it was that before the election, too. So this must just be people commenting on Elon Musk and or Donald Trump, right?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, in leading up to the election and in the fallout from the election, there definitely has been a big upsurge in Elon Musk, Donald Trump, and their allies kind of content. Whether you follow these people or not, the way the algorithm is running right now, it's lots and lots of that kind of stuff.
I think a lot of people have noticed that too. And if that's not what you want to see or hear right now, then away you go. I wonder though if then Blue Sky will also be, I don't know if civil is the right word, but... But do you think that the feel of the content will be different on these other platforms?
I mean, it's hopeful that it will be. It's all about whether they get the users. You know, people sign up, but then do they stay? I mean, everyone got excited for Threads when it came out, and people signed up, and then people didn't really use it. Same thing with Mastodon. And Blue Sky has been around for a while now. And, you know, it just really, these alternative platforms just haven't really gained traction in the sense of, you know, being used. They may have users, but how much content is out there is debatable.
Is the potential similar to that which Twitter has? That is, do they function the same? Can they do the same things?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's backed by former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey. It looks very, very much like Twitter, just in the way that you use it, the way that it feeds you information. There's a discover feed and a chronological feed, just like the Twitter of olden days. So you can go back and forth between who you follow and what it thinks you might be interested in. We'll have to wait and see whether this catches on or not. I think people in general, too, are just kind of fatigued with social media, whether it's, you know, Twitter or, you know, things like Instagram or Facebook. You know, we've just been looking at this for so long. And, you know, especially with the nastiness of the election, people might just need a break.
I don't use those handheld platforms that much, but I am on Threads, and everything that I used to use Twitter for, I do get those same people are making the same posts on Threads, so it works for me. And yet, I know more people that are like this. They hate Elon Musk, and they will not stop using Twitter. That's the conundrum.
Yeah, exactly, and it's tough, but you know, the more people that leave Twitter or just don't post as much as they used to, the less useful it is to the average person. You know, so much of the mainstream media and public figures, they've just left. You know, whether it's because of politics or because it's not useful to them anymore, it doesn't really matter. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
Talk to me about the EU and Meta. There is a fine that Facebook's had to pay. What's the story here?
Yeah, European Union regulators have hit Meta with a fine of nearly 800 million euros. And for us, that's about $841 million. And it has to do with antitrust issues and what they're calling abusive practices involving its marketplace online classifieds business. They're saying that Meta basically stacked the deck, that they made it harder for other competitors to compete against them by, you know, putting these marketplace ads first and foremost in front of people, and also by using the data that they get from their social media platforms to target people with ads for these marketplace listings.
Right. So if I understand correctly, Facebook Marketplace, very popular place to buy and sell stuff. I've used it before. Mm-hmm. And Facebook will favor that rather than maybe other sites or platforms you could access on in their portal that might be just as good, might even have cheaper stuff, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're running the platform, you can kind of do things in a way that would favor your interests, except when it comes to, you know, antitrust regulators. So they're levying this fine, and they're telling Meta they can't do this anymore, that it's anti-consumer. Meta says it's going to comply with the order and not do this again, but it also says it's going to appeal.
Disney earnings are up, and it's maybe no small part because some of their movies have been doing well. Is that pretty much the way this stock goes? It goes up when they have a positive release, and it goes down. I mean, they've got other properties, the theme parks and so forth. Talk a little bit about Disney.
Sure. I mean, we forget that Disney is more than Mickey Mouse and more than movies. It's also things like ESPN and ABC News, which kind of fall by the wayside, but you know, Inside Out 2, my kids saw it. You know, things like Deadpool and Wolverine, these brought in tons of money at the box office for Disney. They're also getting a decent amount of money from their streaming service, which just about everybody seems to have now. You know, whether it's just Disney Plus or whether you've got, you know, Disney, Hulu, and ESPN, people are paying, and they're paying more because Disney has raised prices for that lately as well.
Somebody called in this week and asked, if I'm going to just have one platform or maybe two, what should I have? The guest we had on at the time said, well, it depends on what you want to watch. But I think they were talking about maybe the depth of offerings and, mm-hmm. you know, navigation, the things that you want in a platform. I wonder how you would answer that. If I were going to cut some of these platforms out, some of these streaming services, what would I keep?
Sure.
What would I get rid of?
I mean, it's tough because it does depend on you. I have kids. They will watch Disney and not just, you know, Mickey Mouse. They're too old for that. But they'll, you know, they like all the Marvel and, you know, the Deadpools of the world and things like Inside Out 2. We went to see it in the theater. So, you know, that streaming service is great. Hulu is really caught on, too, with people with ads. They've had some really good shows that are enough to hook people. Only Murders in the Building.
We heard some extraneous voice there, but it's all good. In fact, I was just thinking about Hulu because there's a show that is on Hulu that escapes me just now. But oh yeah, the well, there is a movie, and if you watch it, you'll be able to see this, Bree. It's mm-hmm. Christmas at the Ranch. And it's one of those sort of Hallmark Channel Christmas movies, but it's on Hulu. And when you watch it with your family, the radio studio that DJ is working in is WGN Radio Studios.
Oh, that's so cool.
So watch it and go, wow, that's where John Williams and Pete Zimmerman and everybody are.
Oh, lovely. It's lots of fun, definitely.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer over at CNET. Hey, nice to talk to you today, Bree. We enjoy your company.
Oh, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Aki Ito at Business Insider wrote about how fewer Americans want to climb the career ladder, and her story on their site begins with the story of Zach. Late last year, she writes, two of Zach's managers at the construction and engineering firm where he works pulled him aside. Congratulations, they said. You're getting promoted to be the head of the department. They told him the role would come with a 10% raise, maybe even more. They thought they were rewarding him for all his great work, but the whole time Zach had one thought in his mind, how do I get out of this? He liked his current role at the company. He had no interest in running the whole team. Besides, becoming a manager would require him to go into the office every day. And so, Aki, what did he do about that offer then?
You know, he eventually turned it down. He told his bosses he would think about it. But a few days later, when his bosses kind of assumed that he would take it and started talking about when he was going to take over the role, he said, wait a second, like, I think I don't want this. And he ended up turning it down.
Why are you writing about this story? Is this something that's happening more often?
Yeah, I've just been hearing about people who don't want a promotion more often just in the last few years. People who say that they just don't aspire to that, you know, senior vice president position one day. And I had been even hearing of people like Zach who actually actively turned down offers of promotion, sometimes even willingly took a demotion. And that really surprised me because, you know, getting a promotion is kind of the equivalent of the American dream. Yeah. And so it felt like something that was different and worth highlighting.
To what do you attribute that? Why are people making that sort of a decision?
You know, I think it's a lot of things. I think part of it is, you know, people's changing relationship to work since the pandemic, more of a, you know, a desire to emphasize work-life balance. I think working from home for the first time really changed people's priorities in a really powerful way. That was certainly the case for Zach, who I write about in my story. I think another thing is just, you know, this, you know, idea of like how you should be a loyal soldier and like continue to climb up the ranks in a company. That idea is just dead. You know, it used to be the case that you would be at a single company for your entire life, but that hasn't been the case for decades. And so I think employees just don't see that clear path to, you know, climbing up the ranks anymore either. They see it as unrealistic. So they're just kind of like, what's the point?
And I'll offer this too. Tell me if you think there's something to this. You say that that idea of the American dream climbing up the corporate ladder is dead. I think what's also alive is people's realization that being happy is more important than being happy at work or having a better job. People are, this happened all the time during the pandemic. People either quit working altogether and were happy about it. They were working from home and they liked it better. It just seemed like there was an assessment about what makes me happy at home, at work, in life, and giving it all to the boss wasn't it anymore. People are more interested in being happy almost than being more profitable. You think that's part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there definitely is this kind of changing definition of both happiness and of success for people, especially people who are kind of in the younger generations. I hear this especially from young people these days. They're kind of like, I don't want to stay inside a corporation my whole life. You know, I don't really see, you know, the point of that anymore. I'd rather start my own company. So there's a, you know, a real resurgence in interest in entrepreneurship and having like a side hustle, for example. People see that as being more stable than having a corporate job where you can just get laid off anytime with no notice. And a lot of people see this kind of life, you know, going into the office every day, 9 to 5, is just incredibly tedious and outdated.
You know, retirement notwithstanding, the object of the game, I think, in life is to be happy. And I think we've all seen a good job as a vehicle to provide happiness. But I just think people are coming to the realization that they can be happy without a little extra money because they're going to go for a hike or they're going to travel more instead of acquiring more goods. The story that you tell of Zach is a guy who wanted to spend more time with his kids, and working from home, he's able to do so. So he turns down a senior position, a 10% raise. Who knows what kind of perks would come with that along the way. You also write in your story, Aki, that, and I want you to just tell us why you included this. You talk about how the work, you talk about the work ethic in America and how the Industrial Revolution changed the workplace. And this is an interesting paragraph. You say that became a problem when the Industrial Revolution arrived. Companies exploded in size, and more Americans found themselves working for someone else. In 1820, 80% of the workforce was self-employed. In 1820, and I know that's a long time ago, but that's a remarkable number to me. 80% of people worked for themselves. By 1870, only 33% were working for themselves. So what are you saying with those couple of statistics there?
Well, you know, back when America was first founded, it was a country of people who were self-employed. You know, most people were farmers or they were artisans and they worked for themselves. So kind of like the whole idea of the American work ethic is rooted in self-employment. And as a result, it was really individualistic, you know, it was kind of stubborn and rugged. And that really clashed with the work ethic that employers needed in the Industrial Revolution, when people weren't really working for themselves anymore. They were working for somebody else in these, you know, much increasingly large companies. You know, you could no longer be, you know, rugged and individualistic and stubborn because you had to listen to your boss. And so as a result, the American work ethic really changed. It no longer, emphasized, you know, the glory of self-employment. And instead, it was all about climbing this corporate ladder. That's where the, you know, kind of the American careerist work ethic comes from.
And some people are really good at the job they're doing. I mean, I've seen this in my industry and in other industries where, you know, you're a real good doctor, you're a really good radio person, you're really good whatever it is that you do. And so they decide, okay, we're going to make you a manager, but now you're doing that thing that you're good at less. And maybe that's not the best use of some people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is often known as the Peter Principle. You get promoted to the level of your to the point of incompetence. I think a lot of companies are realizing that more and more. I think that's why, especially in tech, there's an individual contributor track of advancement. And then there's also kind of more of a people management track of advancement. Management research, there's a term called management blues, which refers to when people get promoted and they actually kind of get depressed. They miss their old lower level job because they don't see the meaning in their job anymore. They're kind of more removed from the day-to-day activities that they actually really liked on the job.
And some of those people too. Aki Ito writes in Business Insider. She's the chief correspondent there. And if this sounds familiar, you're not alone. Fewer Americans are trying to climb the career ladder and get promoted. Interesting story. Nice to talk to you today, Aki. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
At Business Insider. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Illinois saw an increase in corporate relocation and expansion this year. According to Intersect Illinois, the state saw a 15% increase in both in 2024. Intersect Illinois is the state's public-private economic development partnership. Illinois had 440 projects on the books as the fiscal year ended in June, up from 382 last year. Crane's reports the biggest project was Goshen's $2 billion battery assembly plant in Manteno. Corporate relocations and expansions have gone up 3 years in a row. 13,000 jobs are tied to the 2024 projects. JPMorgan Chase will build a new facility in Winnetka with a retail branch and private banking offices. The location is 791 Elm. Chase says the three-story, 35,000-square-foot building will allow the bank to increase the size of its private banking team in the northern suburbs from 30 to more than 50. The building currently at the location will be torn down early next year, and construction of the new building will be done and open by the middle of 2026. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Mm-hmm, thank you. We've been talking with Illinois farmers this week who are military veterans, and I've got another one on the line.
You have, yep.
He's part of the Homegrown by Heroes program, and he will talk about the similarities of being in the infantry and being a farmer. After I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. A farmer's on the phone.
My name's Brad Deering. My family and I live in Bloomington, Illinois.
Brad and his family run Deering Country Farm, which in an area of corn and soybean farms running in the thousands of acres is just a speck, 30 acres. He and his wife bought it 20 years ago.
Right away, we had signed up for the Conservation Reserve program.
They wanted to protect their property from chemicals that might drift in from the neighbors.
And we're able to plant the windbreak, over 5,000 trees on our property.
On their property, which had been a cornfield, the Deerings started raising organic veggies, and word got around.
It just kept growing and growing, and people started asking us about meat, so we bought a few head of cattle and started providing some beef, and people asked about some eggs, and so we said, sure, we'll get some chickens.
Brad graduated from high school in 1989. At the time, he didn't think college was for him, so he joined the military and was on active duty for 2 years in Europe guarding Pershing missile installations. He says the work on a farm has a lot in common with being in the infantry.
You know, adverse weather and conditions, and as a farmer, there is a lot of that when you have to be out in the sweltering heat or the freezing cold. So I think most veterans do have that moxie, get down, get it done. And sometimes when it doesn't pan out the way that you want it, we pick up our bootstraps and let's get this thing going again.
Deering Country Farm is part of the Homegrown by Heroes program. It's a state-supported marketing program that gives farmer veterans stickers and other materials to show potential customers.
Gives us a little bit of advertising advantage, I'd say, as well as people know they're supporting a veteran-owned business.
Brad Deering of Deering Country Farms, Farmer Veteran of the Year in Illinois a couple of years ago, and he's got a website.
It's DeeringCountryFarms.com.
Thank you, sir. And Deering is spelled D-E-A-R-I-N-G. On the food calendar, it's National Pickle Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Matt Adams joins us now, a principal at Deloitte Consulting, specializing in the retail sector. We talk to him now and again about spending, and in this case, the projections for it. How are you, Matt? Welcome back.
Doing great, John. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
So you've got the I'll call it a forecast, your survey about holiday spending in Chicago. What are we thinking?
Yeah, this is the 39th year that Deloitte has surveyed consumers around the country within the Chicagoland area about how they're feeling about holiday spending. And it sounds like this year they're feeling pretty good. The expectation is that their holiday spend is up 9% relative to last year, up to $1,744, which is a six-year high. And it's fueled largely by a 24% increase on spend and experiences, tickets to events, restaurants, hosting events at your house, as well as just an overarching optimism where 46% of those surveyed think that the economy will improve, which is up from 27% last year. So it looks like it's shaping up to be a holiday that people are really keen to enjoy.
This survey was, I presume, done before the election, right?
That is correct. Yes.
So I won't try and draw any inferences from it. This is just how people felt in the last quarter, say. You make it sound like people are more interested in doing things rather than buying things. Is that true?
Absolutely. 41% of those surveyed plan to spend on experiences, the tickets, the restaurants, spas, things like that, at a tune of about $746. So it's really about spending time with friends and family, hosting events. 8 in 10 say hosting gatherings is a key tradition for them in the holidays and something that they really value.
Hmm. So what's the number, did you say? You said it's up 9%. What's the dollar amount that we expect to spend this holiday season?
Yeah, it's $1,744.
Is that more or less than other parts of the country?
It's right on par with national and a little bit above the rest of the Midwest, but it's pretty consistent. The national number was $1,778 and up 8%, so we're right there with the rest of the country.
What do you attribute this optimism to?
I think it's a combination of emergence from the last few years, which has been a little bit more tumultuous. One thing that customers have said is that fewer of them are expecting higher prices due to inflation this year. So that's, you know, generally making people feel good. It's balanced a little bit. So they're still very much seeking deals. They're really heavily thinking about participating in Thanksgiving sales, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, up significantly from previous years and what we've seen recently. So it's enthusiasm for getting out there and getting good deals, as well as just an overarching kind of expectation on the economy.
Am I reading the survey correctly? The category in which folks are saying they are most likely to buy a gift is clothing and accessories. That's number one.
That is, yes. 77% of consumers have said that that's their top category. And in addition, 65% of consumers are prioritizing that as self-gifting. So it's not just about buying gifts for others. It's about thinking about themselves to some extent, too. And clothing leads the way in both cases.
Self-gifting. I hadn't thought about that. I guess it's got a name, huh?
It does indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, although I'll tell you that as part of that, you know, thinking efficiently about spend, fewer customers are thinking about self-gifting this year relative to last year. By a fair amount. It's 29% plan to self-gift this year versus 47 last year. So they're really looking to spend their money on those around them and again, those engaging experiences.
Yeah, so it sounds like people really are in the mood then this year, right?
Really seems like it's a festive crew.
Merry Christmas, says Matt Adams, a principal at Deloitte Consulting, specializing in retail. You can find out more at Deloitte.com. Stay in touch, Matt. Well done. Thanks for your help.
All right. Thanks, John. Always nice to talk to you.